Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Gab with the Gurus radio show, where you get entertained and motivated by top experts in a variety of fields. Your host, Connie Bennett, is a journalist, columnist, life coach, certified health counselor, speaker, and author of the book, Sugar Shock. Now, here's Connie.
Greetings. Are you a woman on fire? What do I mean by that? Well, do you live your authentic life? Do you cheer on the successes of other women? And do you echo when you have a radio show? I don't know if anybody else is hearing that echo. Oops. We hope it'll go away soon. And if you're a woman on fire, do you always work to improve yourself and invest in your potential? Do you embrace your talents and achievements? And do you love to learn new things? Well, even if you're not a woman on fire yet, by the end of today's show, you will be, because we have with us today Debbie Phillips, who is an executive coach, and she has founded a wonderful group called Women on Fire. It's a national movement for an authentic, empowered way to live your life. So, we're going to find out whether I'm a woman on fire or not based on how graciously I can deal with this echo problem. Okay, so bear with me, people, and I am going to go ahead and change locations where I'm talking and see if that'll get rid of the echo.
Okay, did our echo go away?
Yes, it did.
I think our echo went away. Okay. we are going to start again. No, we're not. We're going to just edit it later. Okay. Debbie, thank you so much for joining us today. We don't usually have these kinds of challenges.
Connie, hi. No problem at all. And there's no echo here for me from you. So, hi.
Oh, well, that's very, very interesting. So, Debbie, you have founded an amazing organization called Women on Fire, and you bring together women from all around the country.
Yes.
So what exactly is Women on Fire?
Well, I started Women on Fire with the simple idea of I wanted to connect fabulous women with other fabulous women. Because as a coach, I just knew these incredible, and worked with and knew incredible women. I know how busy all of our lives are, and it's hard. You know, it's sometimes hard to take the time to meet new and interesting people. And then there was also the aspect of networking. You know, that's just something that many, many women, even very accomplished women, the thought of, ugh, networking, it's become so transactional in our culture that and I know that the most fabulous way for people to meet each other is under circumstances that are fun and social. And if so I created a forum so that women could just have fun. And if they meet somebody that they want to do business with or connect further with, that's their own business. But, yeah, so that's how it got started. And it's just grown and grown into tea parties, a book, a DVD, and national. And we actually have people in Canada and England who consider themselves Women on Fire. And Australia.
Wow. Well, I want to talk about this tea party concept, so I want to thank you. You were kind enough to invite me to one of your tea parties. And those of you who are ladies who are listening, I encourage you to find out about these tea parties. They are really, really unique. And they're fun. And it's like, I had such a kick telling people. They were saying, well, what did you do? You know, and I was like, well, I just came back from a tea party. And I met, like, the coolest women.
Oh, thank you.
And it was
thank you.
Very,
and they
very
you,
exciting.
Connie. They met a cool woman, too, because they got to meet you.
But your tea party concept is an absolutely fascinating idea, and I'm curious, how the heck did you get that idea?
Well, it was one of those great confluences. I had actually been to the place that we use in New York, Lady Mendel's, which is just, it's a secret. So I try not to tell too many people about it. but it is just, it was a wonderful place. And I'd had tea there, and I thought, oh, that place is phenomenal. And once I started Women on Fire, the first time we actually met in a very large group in a theater, and I knew that I wanted a more intimate setting. And it was actually my husband who reminded me about Lady Mendel's. And he said, why don't you do this in a tea party? I'm like, oh, you scored. He got lots of brownie points that day. He got lots of scone points that day because that was perfect. And so once I started the tea parties, then, and we had quite a few of them, I thought, oh, well, maybe they want me, you know, maybe the women would like me to change it up. And so when I suggested this, oh, my goodness, I had mutiny on my hands because everybody's like, no, 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 no. We love the tea parties. And so that concept has stuck.
Now, you're also, for women, you know, who are listening around the country and I guess around the world now, as you mentioned, you have plans for something really, really big this fall. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, and you know what? This is the first place that I can actually talk about it.
Cool.
Yeah, so this is a scoop, Connie. In the fall, in November, in Chicago, November 13th and 14th, we'll have a two-day Women on Fire retreat in Chicago. The location's still to be determined, but the guest speaker will be Stedman Graham. And he is actually one of the most wonderful, inspiring, rock-steady people who I have been very fortunate enough to know, and he's always really encouraged me. In fact, he was one of the first people when I became a coach 15 years ago. He said, Debbie, that fits you glove in hand. And he's just a really inspiring person, and he's going to be our kickoff speaker. And the and then I'll tell you more.
And I guess we should probably say that a lot of people know him because of a famous person he's hung out with.
He's got kind of a famous girlfriend. There you go.
And, of course, for those of you who don't know who we're talking about Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, exactly. And Stedman Graham is, you know, her longtime partner. And she is a very lucky woman because he's just a really wonderful, talented, terrific, encouraging man. And
so you've known him for a few years.
I have. I met him. I ran a television production company with a television show called Life Choices, and we met then, and he was actually starting his marketing company. And we just became great friends, and he has really been, like I said, just a really inspiring, encouraging person in my life.
Huh. So tell us about this exciting book that just came out.
Yeah. Well, it's called Women on Fire, 20 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. And the reason that it's a compilation book. It's 20 women, many of whom I either knew very well or coached. And the reason I had dreamed of putting together a book, because there are so many life circumstances that we all go through. We almost all of us at some point or another go through trying to find our passion, trying to find love or recovering from love, recovering from grief, the divorce. There's all sorts of things in life that many of us as women, men too, but women are who I focused on in this, we wrestle with those or struggle with those. And I always thought that the most power was in hearing how someone else got through something or discovered something or coped with something. That always is what has the richest nuggets I discovered. So I was thinking if I put together a book with those struggles, that that would be something that many women would enjoy. And indeed, I'm just blown away by how much response there has been to this book. And I'm just loving it every day and deeply, deeply rewarding to have people begin to tell me their own life stories and how something that they read in the book touched them deeply.
You know, what really struck me, I mean, these stories were like so honest and open and authentic and absolutely incredibly, you know, inspiring stories.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we have very busy women in this book, and I know we have one of the people who shared her stories waiting to come in to talk with us. So we're going to go back to you, Debbie, but if it's okay, we're now going to talk to Shannon McCaffrey, and she has a very inspirational story and one that I think a lot of women in this day and age can relate to. Shannon, you're there, right?
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hi.
So you wrote a fascinating essay for this book about breaking loose from corporate America, and you clearly had some major challenges that you were facing. What was it, 4 times that you were let go of corporate positions?
Yes, that's right. 4 times in 9 years.
Wow.
Yeah. When you look back on it, it was a great experience, but when you're in it, it's really, really hard. And so when I wrote the chapter, I wrote it so that, you know, I could help other people if they're faced with similar situations, because right now, especially with what's happening with the economy,
right,
you know, being laid off, especially if it's a job you've had for a long time, for me, I really thought the job was me. Do you know what I mean? Everything about what I did at my work was a part of myself. So when they let me go, I really didn't know who I was. So that was really hard. That was a struggle.
Well, certainly a lot of women can, you know, and men can relate to what you went through, and you know, in this economy. So clearly, you know, I want to encourage people to get the book, the new Women on Fire book. It's called Women on Fire, 20 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. But Shannon, perhaps you can give us 2 or 3 tips for people who are facing a situation like that where, you know, they perhaps have been let go of a position that they've had for a number of years.
Sure. One of the things that really helped me was to have a really good support team. I call it a support team or support system. Because they're going to be really instrumental in helping you get through it. Because I think one of my own struggles was I didn't know how to ask for help. And I came across Debbie, thank goodness, when the first layoff happened. And she was instrumental in helping me really get through that in one piece. And she helped me figure out how to create my own support system. And through that, I was really able to do it. Because I think a lot of times we suffer privately and alone thinking that there's no one that can help us, or that we struggle with not, you know, wanting or feeling if we ask for help, then we're going to be too vulnerable. Do you know what I mean? And so that was really, you know, if you can have the courage to ask others for support, I think that, you know, your experience will be, you know, much less stressful if you have, you know, the support of other people.
Wow. So what was it like to actually, I mean, write this piece? I'm breaking loose from corporate America.
Actually, you know what? It was really kind of fun because, you know, Debbie and I talked about it. Like, you know, well, I'm sure I'll write, you know, a chapter in the book. And, you know, it kind of just unfolded that it was going to be about, because when you start writing about something, it never ended up what I thought I was going to write about. I didn't think I was going to write about, you know, me losing my job that many times. And it just kind of happened. And the funny thing is I ended up writing 10,000 words. And I only needed 3. So at some point, I think I have a lot to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Connie, this is Debbie, and hi, Shannon.
Hey.
And I just have to say that it takes a lot of courage for all of these authors to really write. Many of them were first-time writers publicly, and to share right from their soul.
Yeah.
What is the maybe for some of them the deepest, most difficult struggle of their life, and for someone like Shannon, who so eloquently then told the strategies that worked for her. And Shannon, you just have to say my favorite. I don't know if you know it, but what's
my
favorite?
Oh, I don't think I know it, Debbie. Oh my God, I don't think I know it.
Oh my gosh, it's strategy number 3 that you picked. You remember that one?
Take yourself on vacation.
Yeah, girlfriend. I think you should say a little something about that, because that was instrumental.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, what happened was at the time of my, I don't remember if it's the third or fourth time, it's the third time I was being laid off, I was, I lost my house, I lost my marriage, I lost my job, and I was basically didn't think I could lose anything else, and I ended up deciding to go on vacation because I'm thinking if it's this bad, well, you know, going away for a couple of days, it's, you know, it can't be much worse than this. And Debbie actually was really encouraging, and I ended up taking a trip to Peru, and it was probably one of the most healing and inspiring things I could have done. And everything worked out when I got back. And on that trip, you know, it was a trip filled with very inspirational and spiritual people, and we meditated a lot, and there were a lot of, like, Reiki masters and different yoga people, and it was a way to really, you know, deal with what I was going through, and had some very amazing supportive people on the trip with me. When I got home, I was just in such a great space that I was able to shake up my environment by going on that trip and really being able to focus. When I got back, I hit the ground running, and I got a job, I got a place to live, and dealt with my divorce, and that was that. So.
That's a good strategy. So I guess it's an appropriate time for me to say that the Gab with the Gurus radio show is taking a vacation.
Cool.
Where are you going?
Well, I'm just not going to have a radio show for the entire month of July. I'm still debating what to do about August because I need a break.
Yeah, and just what Shannon was saying, I think any time, and that's another wonderful coaching strategy, and Connie, you're a coach, and you know it's so important to take a break every once in a while. Just you come back so fresh, and you come back with new ideas, and I'll bet you can find somebody who'd love to take over your show for that short period of time. So, you know, you're giving them a gift and giving yourself one as well.
Yeah. So I believe we have another woman on fire waiting in the wings. Either that or we have a caller with a question. So area code 201, welcome. This is Connie. Are you a woman on fire, or do you have a question and you want to be a woman on fire? Okay. Hello? Okay, sorry. We have seem to have had some more technical issues. So, Debbie, tell us a little bit more about your background. I mean, you're an executive coach. You've personally coached. You know, we're going to get back to you if that's okay, Shannon, if you can stick around a little longer.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. So your background is as an executive coach. You've coached, like, you know, hundreds of women. And what led up to the whole Woman on Fire movement?
Well, I actually started out as a journalist, and I love that, and it was wonderful. And I was young; I was in my 20s, and I went from journalism to working on a presidential campaign. And I worked for John Glenn. I was just I was in my late 20s, and it was just thrilling. And I had my career kind of planned out in my head, and after that, I had the great fortune to become the spokesperson or the press secretary in political language to the governor of Ohio. And I did that job for 5 or 6 years and traveled all over the world and just met everybody I ever dreamed of meeting. It was just a very inspiring but exhausting job. And in all the time that I was both in politics as a journalist, then I had a third part of my career where I ran a television production company. And I did all this before I was 40, and I had support, but I wanted something more and something deeper. I always thought it would be so great just to have my own personal person that I could talk to and I could confide in, and I could think through what are the best moves and am I being the best professionally. And so I literally created... I was taking a sabbatical, and in that time I was taking the sabbatical, so again, that's another one of those examples of taking a little bit of time off for yourself. I created for other people what I had so wanted for myself. I had no clue what to call it, and in those days, I did learn that it was called coaching, and I was so thrilled because I didn't know what I was, and I was actually doing this kind of work, supporting other people in their dreams and in their big goals. And I, when I learned it was called coaching, the profession was so new that no one knew what it was, basically. And I had to continuously explain to people that I wasn't involved in sports. And that's only funny because you don't know how I know nothing about sports at all. And
now, as coaches, we don't need to tell people that sports
know,
are not involved.
Great? And Thomas Leonard, who's somebody that I studied with and who's really considered the modern-day founder of coaching, said, someday, Debbie, I'll never forget this, he said, someday, Debbie, people will ask who, they won't say what is a coach, they'll say who is your coach. Isn't that great? Isn't that wonderful? And I wrote that down, and I remember exactly where I was standing.
I love it.
In the, you know, in the Marriott Hotel when he said that, and I ran back and I wrote it down, and I used that to give myself comfort for a lot of years. And you know, today it's wonderful because people know, you know, that your life really can be enhanced greatly by having a personal, professional, or executive coach. You know that, Connie.
Well, you know, I've now become a fan of both being a holistic health counselor and a life coach, and now I'm both.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but you—it was very interesting how you talked about how you created what you were looking for.
Yeah.
And you know, when I kicked sugar, I didn't have the kind of support that I now seeking to create.
I know that.
So, for instance, I actually had a program that began last night, and it was a four-week program to help people to kick sugar, and it was exactly what I had wanted to have back in 1998.
Yeah, I know. You know, I read your book over the weekend. And
oh, my God.
It's one, you know, it's wonderful, and I was thinking just that. I was thinking of the people, you know, the force field now that is together on this issue, and I don't know whether your listeners know what else you're planning, but it's so needed. And finally, you know, I think many people are turning to this notion of you know, of what you found, what, 1998, 11 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you. So how have the struggles of women have changed over the years?
Well, in my years of coaching, so since 1995, I think it's fascinating that they really haven't changed a great deal. The only thing that I would say is that we're more time strapped than ever. That
mm-hmm.
feels like that's moving faster. And
mm-hmm.
I think if you have children, that's something that I've seen. Children are involved in so much more than they were even 10 years ago. You know, you might have your kid in soccer, but you didn't have your kid in soccer and Girl Scouts and, you know, Indian princesses and just on and on and on. And so that may be a little bit, you know, that whole time starved. Women are time-starved even more. But the struggles really are the same. It's am I living my purpose? Am I living my passion? Am I practicing it? Am I, you know, am I connected to a community? Am I being the best I can be? You know, all those same relationship issues. Do I have a best friend? You know, how often do I get to go out with the girls? You know, am I feeling satisfied? All those struggles really are still the same. And so that's one of the reasons that I wrote the book, because it did feel to me sometimes, because when you're in the struggle, it feels so, you feel so alone, or at least I have, and I know the women that I have coached, they feel so alone. And it's one of the reasons
right.
I wanted to write this book, so that And already, I mean, I had a woman come up to me, and there's a line on the back of the book that says, you know, successfully overcome an eating disorder. And one of our wonderful co-authors, Regina Weicker, wrote a phenomenal piece on struggling with bulimia. And, you know, somebody came up and put their arm around me and pointed to the eating disorder and said, thank you for writing this, you know, having this in the book. And so the struggles, all the struggles in the book, really are still, they were the struggles when I started coaching years ago, and they're still struggles for many, many women.
Right.
When you're going through divorce, it feels like you're the only one going through divorce.
Shannon, what kind of response have you gotten from other women?
Oh, I've gotten some really great responses. I think the fact that when people see that I was laid off so many times, they think, wow, I'm only going through this once, and if you can do it after four times, then I certainly can use some of your help here and help me get through it for the first time. So, yeah, I've had some really great responses. Well, because the end of the story is I ended up, after being laid off four times, I ended up starting my own business, and now I'm doing really well, and I love it. It was the perfect thing. I just needed to get that hint from the universe four times that I needed to do my own thing.
We Shannon and I laughed. Remember, Shannon, when we were saying, the universe keeps delivering you the same package until you fully open it. Remember that?
Oh, that's a very clever way of putting it.
It is. That's why Jenny amazing woman.
How very clever. Okay, I believe that we were joined by two more women on fire. Speak up if you're one of the co-authors in the book.
Hi.
Hello? Lori Forrester. I hear that.
It is. It's a little early.
So, Lori, thank you so much for joining us. We now have yet another co-author who wrote a fabulous essay, Finding Something to Whine About. And tell us how the word whine is obviously intended as, to mean something, obviously.
Well, absolutely. My story is really about finding your passion and creating a career or a life's work out of something you love, right?
Mm-hmm.
So work doesn't have to be difficult, I guess, is what I learned, and that's what my story is about. I really came to Debbie as kind of a stressed-out software executive, and she helped me really crystallize what I loved and how I could make a career out of that. And I love people, and I love wine.
So it's fast. So you went from software executive to sommelier. Did I pronounce that correctly? Expert.
Yes, exactly. And I won't say it was a direct path because every change there are steps and challenges and roadblocks. But that's what a great coach is there to support you through. And as long as you're always constantly making small steps, you always get to where you need to be. So that's what I learned. But, my love came from just taking clients out to dinner and really wanting to understand wine and not feel intimidated. So now my mission is to save people from that and do what I call demystifying wine one glass at a time.
That's a clever way of putting it. It's funny that you mentioned saving, because the subtitle of this book, Women on Fire, about 20 inspiring women share their life secrets and save you years of struggle. Tell us about that theme, Debbie.
Well, it was just that. It was, I know that when we share our stories, it's a shortcut, because you never know what person is listening and is saying, because, Lori went from, I'm sorry, I lost contact there. The cat walked by and knocked the phone over. You never know when, Lori went from being a software executive, and it was very obvious that this woman had deep, deep knowledge and passion about wine and great food, so much so that she married a fabulous chef during the whole process. But, sometimes it's very difficult to see our path. And so when you hear another woman's story on how she progressed along her way, sometimes it can shortcut, so there may be somebody listening who has a profession but a passion and doesn't realize that you can do your passion as your profession, and so that can be shortcutted. And I am, Lori is, Shannon is, we are, as Women on Fire, we're about life is short, and go live your passion and share your gifts with the world. And Connie, after the tea party on Friday, I certainly see you as a, you know, as a woman on fire with all of the things that you're thinking about and your passion and your desire to help make, you know, make people healthy. And so anything that shortcuts the process of us getting to live our authentic selves, you know, I want to do. So that's how, and the title came to me. I mean, I remember I was just sitting there and the title just came to me in a flash.
Well, the title of Women on Fire, or?
No, the entire thing.
Okay, because I love this phrase, Women on Fire. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to read from your book a little bit. At the very, very beginning of Women on Fire, she asked you, are you a woman on fire? Do I desire deep fulfillment in my work and life, cheer on the success of other women, embrace my talents and achievements, eagerly share my information, ideas, experience, and connections to benefit others, always work to improve myself, love to learn new things, know how to ask for help, and it goes on and on and on, but it's just really, really wonderful. So, you know, I think that a lot of women out there sort of lack that kind of passion and fire. And so I think that clearly, you know, what you're doing is you're helping them to tap into that passion.
Well, thank you for saying that, because I have said never, 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 even in people who say I'm depressed. You know, now obviously if you're clinically depressed, that's something else. But even in women who identify themselves as, I don't, you know, I'm just really down, I have always, always, always seen or been able to see, find a spark. We all have it in us.
Hmm.
And I know when women get together, and you saw it at the tea party, and Lori and Shannon have been to many, many tea parties and many coaching, you know, many Women on Fire events or gatherings. There's something about when women come together in these circumstances, which is this very open-hearted way of cheering each other on.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I do want to say something about that, because it's so important,
mm-hmm.
this notion. We walk into a room and we start judging. Most women start judging.
Mm.
And Women on Fire is set up in a way that is just unnecessary. It's unnecessary energy. The only person you should compare yourself to is your goals and your standards. Because that's all you can control. Somebody's always going to be thinner, more beautiful, wear greater clothes. Their kids are going to be better. They're always going to find somebody with kids better behaved than yours or whatever. But in Women on Fire, this is about really getting in touch with your spark, even if it's teeny tiny or you think it's non-existent, to start to find that and go for it.
So, Lori and Shannon, do you, either of you, have anything to add to that?
Well, I would just say, this is Lori, that, you know, Debbie does a great job, and the whole concept around Women on Fire does a great job of attracting the right kind of women, like Debbie says, where you do feel comfortable coming to the tea party in pants and a skirt. You know, you don't feel like it's a big 20 outfit decision. You're there for something deeper, and you know, usually you laugh and you cry and everything in between, but you get great ideas. And even when you come in and you see somebody and you think, I'm not sure I'm going to have anything in common with this person, you always do, because at the basic level we all have something in common.
Yeah, definitely. This is Shannon, and what I would add to that too is, you know, having gone through my experiences of being laid off, if it wasn't for Women on Fire, I mean, I actually wrote a blog about how Women on Fire basically saved my life, because looking forward to going and being with these women, because sometimes I wasn't on fire about anything. I was either, you know, and I was in embers or ashes or at some point along the way, and I could be however I was, because I knew that the more authentic I was going to get the support that I needed, and the honesty and the caring, and just as Lori eloquently said about the women that Debbie brings to these parties, you know, it's a really good way. If you need whatever you need at that particular point, you know, where you are in your life, you're going to get it by going to these tea parties and getting that support, or getting laughter or getting tears, which I think we had a lot of both actually the last tea party. So it was wonderful.
Well, I have to tell you, it was a very, very busy week for me last week. But I was so excited. Oh, I'm going to go to this tea party.
I know.
And I was like, I don't care if I don't have time. I'm going to make time to go. So, and I really was struck by the camaraderie, you know, between the women. So how can women, obviously, you know, we have people, women from all around the world, and we also have men listening to this show. How can they get involved with your organization? How can they buy your book? Other than I did post something on my blog, which is gabwiththegurusblog.com, and it does include links to your book and a little bit more information about your group. But how can they get involved?
Thank you so much. Well, the best way to get involved is really just to get on our list so that they can receive invitations. And so there's two websites. One is bawomanonfire.com or debbiephillips.com is the other one. And then they can buy the book from both of those. The book's also available at Amazon. And but those two websites really are the best way to get involved, so they can begin to get some of our material and a newsletter and be invited to the events. And then, of course, with our retreat coming up in Chicago, November 13th and 14th, we'll have registration in a couple of weeks. But if they sign in to bawomanonfire.com, they will get notified, and they can learn more. And then if they decide it's not for them, you know, with a press of a button, you can disconnect yourself. But that's really the best.
So tell us what you're planning at this retreat. I have my calendar in front of me here. I'm writing it down.
Oh, good. Good for you. Well, we'll do it in Chicago because we have women from all over. We do tea parties all over. So that was a great central location to be in Chicago. And what we're going to do is, because this is the year that the book came out, we also have a DVD that's an hour long that was created by the filmmaker, television producer Meredith Page, who's also a woman on fire. And so at this retreat, Stedman will kick it off. He'll be the opening speaker. But the retreat is going to revolve around panels of the co-authors. And because we have a number, and I'm just looking at them now, we will have something, interestingly enough, Connie, we'll have something, I want to do something on super wellness or ultra wellness, because we have a number of women, Kelly Black, for one, who has the Balancing the Executive Life program in New York. And she,
well, I'm happy to have that.
Yeah, listen, I'm taking notes here. And we also, Emmy Jones wrote a phenomenal chapter, Finding Love Way Past 40. There are some other authors in the book who found love way past 40, and I think that would be a wonderful panel to have. Also, I'd like to do a panel on finding your passion. So what both Lori and Shannon talked about.
Finding your passion,
yeah,
that is really a wonderful topic.
Yes, exactly. And so there'll be a panel on that. Then in
now, are men going to be allowed?
That's an interesting question. I mean, it's called Women on Fire. If a man signed up, I mean, we'll obviously have a cap. It'll be limited to, a certain number of women. But if a man signed up, and, I mean, I would not, you know, yeah, he can go for it. That's fine. What did you say?
We'll charge him double.
There you go.
I mean, after all, you're having a guy give a talk.
Well, this is the first time we've actually had somebody. You know, the speakers we've had in the past have been women. And
now, wouldn't it be nice if your speaker brings along somebody?
Well, you know, something that's really darling is that the women in his office, one of them told me that she wants to come, and she's like really excited to figure out how to come. And I'm thinking, that's pretty cool, because obviously she can go to
now
other
by
things.
She, you better tell our listeners who we mean by she, just in case.
Right. She could probably go to Oprah any day, but she's wanting to come to Women on Fire, and I was really deeply touched about that. And so I think Nadia is coming along with Stedman that day. But anyway, it's very exciting, and Lori and I have been talking about some things. You know, Lori does corporate wine tastings, And so she and I have been chatting about, you know, what kind of possibilities we could do for fun in Chicago. And we haven't settled on anything yet, but we're talking, aren't we?
We might just raise a glass, Connie.
It sounds like a very, very inspiring, you know, I mean, clearly you're doing an inspiring job. Your organization is inspiring. And you clearly help to bring women, you know, to the next level and also to, you know, to sort of realize the power and the, you know, I guess, you know, the inspiration that could come out of their struggles.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a wonderful way to, you know, to bring that together, because I feel so passionately, as do all the women that I've worked with. You know, everybody has this special, unique gift. And to quote Martha Graham, you know, if we don't use it, it's lost forever. And I just think that is one of the most powerful, you know, it's not our job to judge it. It's just our job to go do it and give it with all of our heart. And, you know, I'm just really actually honored to be on this show, because every one of you, Connie, you included, it was inspiring to hear what your life was about. And, you know, it's inspiring. Lori and Shannon have been in my life for, you know, more than a decade, and it's inspiring to see what they've accomplished and the kind of women that they are in this world. So I feel very blessed. The gift is mine, you know, that I get to work with such fabulous women.
So do any of the three of you, Shannon, Debbie, or Lori, do you have any thoughts about, you know, about working on the book, what it was like to, you know, to reveal so much of yourself? Just any other thoughts?
Oh, I was, you know, blessed to do it, because it forced me to tell my story. Because I think sometimes when you're in the corporate world, you're not used to revealing personal things about yourself.
Mm.
So that took a little bit to get into it, but I'm so glad I did, and I think, what a gift for my daughter, you know, now to be able to read that.
So. Very, very interesting. Anybody else?
I
love putting people on the spot.
Just to similar to Lori, I think, just to having the, thinking about writing this story and then finally putting it on paper, and then when I read it, I thought, oh my gosh, like, it was sort of this disconnect, like, this is actually what happened to me, because it, you know, it happened over a period of time, and it was such a gift to be able to write it all down and sort of document it, and then having people's responses and how, you know, it's really helpful, because I didn't just put my story, but I also put some of the things that helped me during the struggle, and that was really helpful. But I think, you know, having to read it, and then also you have to worry about, you know, because I actually had my parents in there at one point, and then I thought, oh, you know, I only had one and not the other. I thought, oh, then you have to think about, oh, when people start to read this, because I didn't want to do that. You know, I didn't want to think, oh, what are people going to think when they read it? That's why it was wonderful having Debbie and having her great, wonderful editor that was on the book, and it was really helpful to sort of bring the whole chapter together. So that was
And this is Debbie, and I, you know, both Lori and Shannon really dug deep and went back to the emotion of their story, which is why I think women are so deeply responding to this book. And the one thing that I'm getting, and every single day now, I'm getting responses on email or Facebook. It's just terrific. And women are, who are reading the book, and men too. I've had some great responses from men, but women are saying, thank you for having real women talk about real struggles. I thought this was going to be celebrities, or I thought this was going to, you know, be, well, they turned out to be Fortune 500 CEOs, but they're real women, and that has made a difference. For me personally, to, I have a chapter, there's 19 women, and then I had a chapter, and my struggle was around, I felt like kind of a mama duck, you know, I wanted to make sure that everybody was able to do their chapter, and my chapter came very, very late, and I was in the writing process of my own story, I was so amazed at the level the layers and level of truth. I was always saying, what's the truth? What's the truth? What's even deeper than that in the truth? And going to that place. And I just found it, once I got to the truth, the story really wrote itself. But I was, that's what was the kind of aha for me. I was like, wow, there's a lot of levels of truth. You know, there's a level that my mother might think. There's a level that I tell. But in really digging deep, there was. And I don't know if, Lori, if you and Shannon have had this, but I've had people say, oh, wow, I knew this about you, but I didn't know that.
Sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Huh. So I want to thank all three of you so very, very much. Debbie, hang tight for a minute, but Lori, thank you so much for joining us, and Shannon, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate your taking time out of your busy day to come on the show. And Debbie, if you can just hang tight for a minute, because I thought it would be fun to introduce you to our next guest.
I would love to. Thank you, and thanks so much, Lori and Shannon.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you both so very, very much. Ole, are you on the phone?
I am over here.
Okay, cool. I didn't know whether that was you or somebody else. I am going to introduce you to our previous guest, who is Debbie Phillips.
I want to be on fire.
And Debbie is founder of an
organization.
So Debbie is founder of an organization called Women on Fire, and she just came out with a new book with essays from a bunch of women called Women on Fire, 20 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle. And Ole has an exciting new book called Aspire, 3 Powerful Strategies for Creating More of What You Want Now. And what I started doing recently is a lot of fun, which is that I let guests ask each other questions.
Oh,
wow. Totally unplanned.
Right.
And so do either of you have questions for each other?
Well, I have one. Yeah, I'd like to know how I get to do the keynote at Women on Fire.
I'm sorry, you have to date Oprah. Well, and I was so delighted when I saw that you were a guest on the show. I saw your book, and I said to myself, well, I'm going to listen to his part of the show, and then I'm going to order the book.
Well,
so,
great. Order about 10 or 15 and give them to your friends. So.
Oh, you got it. And I do that all the time. So, well, my quick question to you is, what inspired you to write your book?
Basically, I found a formula, to be successful with, and I wanted to pass it on to other people. That was, simple. It was right to the point. It really accesses the mechanisms that human beings have internally, and it also taps into what Rhonda Byrne was talking about in terms of the power of the universe and law of attraction. So, I combined both the work of Maxwell Maltz way back in Psycho-Cybernetics, which is psychological sort of approach.
Love that book.
Yeah, I did too. And it's the first one I ever read in terms of this topic. So I blended that basic psychology with the law of attraction and the work of Jill Vitale and Rhonda Byrne and those types of people. So, and I wrote it in almost memoir form. I was listening to your guest and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. We both kind of approached it the same way, and I revealed a lot about my life because I think that's the only way that you can really connect with people.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, what a delight to meet you, and I can't wait to read your book. And
great.
I'm glad our paths crossed. Thank you so much, Connie.
So now, Ole, do you have a question for Debbie?
Yes.
And please tell me I'm pronouncing your first name correctly.
It's Ole, yeah.
Okay, phew.
If you were a telemarketer, you'd go, Ollie, Ole. They always stumble on that first one, which is short for something else, which I won't reveal. But I didn't hear the first part of the book that you wrote. And could you sum it up for me? I didn't hear that. I didn't get on until just a couple minutes ago.
Sure. It's called Women on Fire, 20 wow. Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggle.
Wow.
Yeah.
Strategy.
Yeah.
So what was your secret?
I wrote about grief. And so I wrote from personal experience through my lifetime about the major grieving that I had, and I shared the strategies of working through grief that I learned along the way. Because when I first my first grief was my grandmother when I was 10, and I couldn't believe, I knew nothing about grief, and I couldn't believe how people seemed not to be able to handle it. And even at 10, I was thinking, wait a minute, we all die. Doesn't anybody know how to handle this?
Well,
and
no, they don't.
No, they don't. And it was interesting because Connie had a wonderful show with three grief experts a few weeks ago, and I was so thrilled because they had it was chock full of strategies, you know, that still in our culture people don't know.
Yeah, my wife is.
I should just add, I started the show, right? I mean, I booked the show because my dad had passed away, and I realized that, well, you know, I'm dealing with this, and why not help other people deal with their grief at the same time? So that was what inspired me to do the show, and the show was actually dedicated to my dad.
My wife, Sue-Ann, is just a brilliant woman. She is smart. She's a warrior, and she lost her mother when she was 16.
Mm.
And as a 16-year-old, she never got to express the grief.
Right.
And her dad kind of went to the tank after that. He was a physician, and Aunt Sue-Ann's been harboring those feelings for decades.
Yeah, yep.
And finally, she's now getting to the point where she's starting to talk about it and express it and feel it rather than just shut it off.
Yeah, good.
And it's
good.
Just wonderful to watch that happen.
Good for her. Hey, Ola, there's a phenomenal book that I think is the seminal book for this. It's called Motherless Daughters. Maybe she has it, but if she doesn't, it's Motherless Daughters by Hope Edelman.
Okay.
It's phenomenal. It's the book I use with my clients. I used it for myself.
Fantastic.
And then she has a number of books, like Letters from Motherless Daughters. But it's pretty much a book that, you know, we consider, I mean, just a great, like kind of a Bible for women who've lost. And then there's a book I just read, and interestingly enough, I read it twice. It's called Return to My Mother's House. The author of it was actually at our tea party, Connie, Gail Straub.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and Ola, I think your wife would love
it. Oli, by the way, yeah.
It's, oh, I'm sorry, Oli?
Oli, yeah.
Oli, oh, pardon me, I'm so sorry. I was trying to be careful about that, and then I... But I think she would like, you know, both of those are so comforting and give the path to, okay, when I lose my mother at an early age, what does that mean?
Connie, are we live? Yeah. Connie, are we live?
Yeah.
Because I think Sue-Ann's probably listening. So.
Hi, Sue-Ann. I hope she's taking notes.
You would love it.
Well, Gabby, thank you so much for joining us, and Oli, thank you for waiting patiently. And if you could stay maybe a little bit longer, would that be okay?
I'm stuck in a hotel room in Fairfield, New Jersey, so
right.
I'm not going anywhere.
Well, okay, cool.
I'll go listen to the rest of the show with Oli.
Thank you so much for joining us, Debbie, and good luck with the Women on Fire book. And it's very exciting and very inspiring for women anywhere.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the show, Connie.
And I look forward to seeing you at another tea party.
Oh, well, you're on the list. We won't let go of you now. Thank you, Connie.
Thank you. So, Ola, you've written like an amazing book, and I think it really is going to help, you know, lots and lots of people. So, my first question is, you know, what inspired you to write this book?
Well,
I mean, you're known as, you know, a keynote speaker and strategic planning consultant, corporate trainer, and, you know, doing all that. What made you take time off to do all this?
Well, it really wasn't time off. I had a previous book out called Beneath the Armor, which is a book about how to run a small to mid-sized business. And so I see myself as a writer and a speaker and a consultant. I sort of like that multifaceted aspect of me. And I had a story to tell that I thought would help others because frankly, you know, my background, I just came from virtually nothing. Family of five, there's only two people in that family, my father and myself, who even had high school diplomas. My mother and two sisters never even finished high school. My father, the family suffered a tremendous tragedy in his life. We lost an entire home with no insurance and nothing else in a huge landslide when I was 8 years old. And my father, you know, turned to the bottle for an advocate, you know, for support, and he was the only father I ever knew, and he was a raging alcoholic, and our family was, you know, we lived in slum trailer parks on Florence Avenue in Dole Gardens, California, and above liquor homes and liquor stores, and evicted by sheriffs, you know, when we had a home and that type of thing. So I literally came from nowhere, and I was a good athlete and wound up in a small town with my mother living above Ron Har's funeral parlor and in Oak Harbor, Washington, actually. And so I got a chance to go to college on a football scholarship. I went to the University of Washington and graduated there. And I noticed, you know, I got, because I was an athlete, I got into good fraternities and things like that with a marginal grade point average. And I noticed that those people that came from homes, they had doctors and lawyers and CPAs and CEOs for fathers and mothers, they thought differently than I did. And so I really thought, how do people become successful? Because I didn't have a clue. You know, I was told by my father that money was the root of all evil. And for me to be successful in life, and I just studied it and studied it and studied it and put my own formula together that worked for me, and then I told my story in Aspire. So I just want people, I don't want people to get stuck, and a lot of people are. And you don't have to. It really truly is a choice, and unless you just didn't get dealt a full deck, you know. And even that, you find remarkable people that overcome handicaps and that type of thing. So,
why do you think people get stuck?
Why do I think? I think they're afraid to get out of the status quo. They're afraid to get out of their comfort zones. They're not only afraid of failure and afraid of success, but I think they're afraid of the criticism that goes along with that. And also a lot of people just don't realize the potential that they have. I mean, I never knew I could be a keynote speaker. I grew up with a speech impediment, you know. So being a keynote speaker internationally is, I mean, that was never on the board. But once I got in there and I worked on it, and of course writing for a living and actually having really internationally, you know, well-to-do, very successful people listen to me, I thought that was pretty amazing. And so I don't think a lot of people realize what they have inside of them. You know, you don't have to Velcro something to you. You just have to open up what's already inside and let it out. And I think people just don't realize it. Plus, they get hypnotized. You know, they think this is all there is.
Hypnotized.
Yeah, they get hypnotized. They think this is all there is. You know, there's nothing more. And they walk around sleepwalking sometimes through life or through their jobs or through their careers or through their marriages or through their avocations, and you just have to wake them up. I don't think there's a better time to be woken up than right now, as we come out of this recession, and this is a chance to launch yourself and really change some things that didn't work in the past. So.
Now, why would now be a better time? I mean,
well,
clearly a lot of people are feeling, you know, the heat and difficulties,
sure.
And I'm sure, you know, every one of us has faced some kind of challenges because of the economy and,
well,
you know, what people are going through.
Our business has too, you know. And I think it's a time to say, well, what worked and what didn't work? And to be
what
very
worked
honest,
and what
yeah,
didn't work.
Didn't work. And what are the choices that I'm making now? And what am I willing to give up to gain something in the long term? And kind of go back and, like, chapter one or the strategy number one, it says investigate your life. And really be a Sherlock Holmes with how things are going and how you're reacting to this. Like, don't stand around the water cooler and complain about how bad things are. You know, go do something about it. Don't let your negative emotions, you know, affect how your next thoughts are going to be. So recast them, and you can only do that if you're wide awake. And so I think this is the time for reevaluation. I mean, the landscape out there is changing. It is changing so fast sometimes, I don't think I'm ever on terra firma. And you just have to go and say, okay, so that part of my life is completed. Now I'm going to launch myself into something. I didn't get into this career until I was 40 years old. I'm 65 right now, so I spent 20 years.
Sure, have a lot more energy than, wow.
Well, I spent you know, 20 years in Fortune 500 companies, kind of getting by and never loving it. And then I changed and I went over when I was 40 and started doing this type of work. And my first year I made $5,000. That wasn't very much money, and I had three kids and a house. And
no, obviously not.
You know, I mean, but I thought, you know, we were talking about passion before. How do you find your passion? And I knew that something was off in me. I knew I was marching to the beat of a different drummer inside, and yet trying to conform to society on the outside. And it, I felt so out of alignment that I had to do this. So, and it worked out. You know, frankly, it's been great.
So tell us then, you talk about three powerful strategies. Of course, we want to encourage people to get the book.
Of course.
It's called Aspire, Three Powerful Strategies for Creating More of What You Want Now.
Yeah. That's the only moment we have.
Like the now part of the book title.
It's funny, you're right. And if we wait for all the conditions and all the stars and planets to line up when it's the right time to pull the trigger on our next move, we'll be waiting forever. And so, and you know, life is temporary, and we just, you know, and we all lose people, and we think, gosh, that could have been me. And so, I think now is the time to do it, and it takes some courage to do that because you'll get criticized. You know, you should be more responsible. You should stick to your knitting. All those cliches we hear, but now's the time to do it. Whenever your now is.
Let's talk about the criticism that people get that may keep them from doing what they want to do.
Well, it's usually dictated by the tribe that they've been born into or the tribe that they joined. And, you know, and there's certain norms of these tribes. Like, you know, and they're all filled with cliches. Don't rock the boat, stick to your knitting, stay on course. And we absorb them in our subconscious mind, and then we create the reality of those things, and then people start to dumb down or numb off. And yet there's a raging fire inside of you, like Women on Fire, that says, I want to write, I want to speak, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, I want a family, whatever it might be. And this criticism is usually from the tribe. And the tribe criticize you because they don't want to raise the curve or break the norm, because that will mean that they might be wrong in what they've chosen for their lives. And I think organized religions do that. I think governments do that. I think, you know, certain cults do that. It goes on and on forever. And it takes some courage to run against the grain. But, you know, if you don't do it now, if you know, you're going to regret that at one point, you know.
I think. So what are the three powerful strategies? I mean, obviously people want to, you know, read your book to go into more detail, but can you...
It was a fake out, Connie. I gave three, but I loaded each strategy up with four chapters, so... Oh, yeah, there we are.
No, your book is chock full of exciting exercises and activities and, you know, it's a wonderful book, and it's actually not one of those tomes. As I've been told.
Well, you know, there's lots of ways to be successful, and this is one way, and it worked for me, and I wanted to share it. The first strategy is simply investigate your life. You know, take a total assessment about how things are doing. What are your core beliefs? What are your values? You know, what's the conditioning? What are the what's the basic assumptions you have about life? And the results that you have will tell you what your belief system are. And I think our fingerprints are on almost every result that we have, and then so sense of being and then accountable for changing it. Now, I'm not saying that people in New Orleans were accountable for Katrina coming in and wiping them out. I mean, I think I can't go there that, but they are accountable how they respond to what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, through no fault of their own, because they didn't have other choices or options, became victims and martyrs and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask people to go ahead and make that assessment, and that is a very tough exercise. You might have to challenge your mom or dad or the priest or the rabbi or, you know, the whatever, or the, you know, the government or whatever it might be. So once we get that figured out, and what's working and what isn't working, then we go to strategy two, which is simply getting some foundation in place, a launching pad. And I do a lot of corporate strategic planning, so I took this from my model. So what are your individual values, which establishes the perimeter of your life? You know, what are your boundaries? What are the values that guide you daily through your life? Whether it be the Ten Commandments or the Quran or whatever you want to do, or just that I want to live a life of integrity or honesty, whatever it might be. I ask people to create a vision for themselves. Where do they want to take their life? That's a struggle. What's the big audacious goal that you're after in your life? And, you know, it's kind of like when John F. Kennedy said he's going to put a man on the moon, return him safely to Earth by the end of the decade. But people don't think about that. They just kind of bump their life forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then three, what's your mission? You know, what's the purpose of life? And I finally figured mine out because it just came to me by accident. And I came up with, I'm the one who's going to influence those who influence many. So I work mainly through leaders. I work for people who are successful. I work for people that have an outreach so they can influence them, and that works for me. And then the fourth one, what are the goals and action steps? You know, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then once you get all that in place, then you launch. And a lot of this stuff comes from psycho-cybernetics. A lot of it comes from a spiritual base. A lot of it comes from Rhonda Byrne with The Secret. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing affirmations, doing the visualization,
mm-hmm.
and broadcasting a really strong, vibrant emotion out to the universe to attract
mm-hmm.
that what you want. So I tell people how to do that. And it's nothing I haven't done. In fact, I do it every morning. I have a little ceremony. And
what do you
works.
Do exactly every morning?
Well, first of all, I wake up. and then I check and see if I still have a pulse, and I'm still fogging up a mirror, and I get past that point, I know I'm going to have a good day. But mainly, I get up about 5 a.m., and the first half an hour is my time.
Mm.
And I put on classical music because I travel with my iTunes, you know, and I got speakers, and I can listen to classical music, and I sit down, and I go through my goals, my affirmations, my visualizations, and the broadcast, the strong emotion, because I carry these 5x7 cards with me, which I change all the time. I just set my day instead of just waking up and running out the door with a donut in my hand and a cup of caffeine-laced coffee, you know, with sugar in it, and try to figure out what my day's like. So I just take that morning, that takes about 20 minutes, and just get myself centered, go through my affirmations and my visualization and then feel the emotion of it, and then I'm launched. And then
so do you mind me asking you what your affirmations are?
Oh, God, you want to hear all of them? I've set goals in five areas of my life.
Mm-hmm.
One is the financial area.
Mm-hmm.
And so the goal triggers off the affirmation. You know, the goal, let's say that you want to have a net worth of X. You
mm-hmm.
know, that's the goal. And so I affirm in a personal, positive, present tense manner that
mm-hmm.
wealth and abundance comes to me in the form of this type of a return. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to set that, and I explain that all in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I have spiritual goals. That's a tough one for a lot of people because I was not born in any spiritual discipline, any religious discipline. So I had a lot of freedom. But, you know, I was talking to a group of CEOs the other day, and we're talking about spirituality. And one of the guys says, you know, he says, I'm not at all aligned with what I was born into, because that's how you usually discover your spirituality or your religion. And he says, I'm Jewish. But he says, I don't feel that that's working for me anymore, but I can't change because my mother is still alive. but that's part of the tribe, you know. And so I have spiritual goals, and then I have personal goals for myself in terms
mm-hmm.
of what I want to do. You know, I love to play golf, and I love to
travel. So basically every morning you state how many affirmations?
Oh, probably 10 to 15.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, it's not, you know, that seems like a lot to some people, and some people don't even have one goal.
And every morning you begin your day before doing anything else by stating your affirmations.
Absolutely. And you want
do you
to
look in the mirror, or what do you
no,
do?
No, I don't do that, but that's not a bad technique. In fact, when I do these radio interviews at home, my wife brings in one of those mirrors, but it's one of those mirrors that, you know, it flips over, and one side is normal, and the other side is completely magnified. You know, so I can see myself talking. She flipped it over one time. I thought, my God, I have a mole here, you know. But yeah, but I say them out loud. Now you can't do that on an airplane.
No, obviously not.
People, will, there'll be people in white coats waiting for you when you get off the airplane. You know, and you'll scare all the other people. But you can do it in the quietness of your hotel room or the quietness of your own home office, and that's where I do that work.
Right.
It does work, and you'd be surprised how it settles you down and gets you set for the day.
Right.
Instead of dashing off to the office and standing by the water cooler and hearing everybody talk and complain about how bad things are, where you can kind of just isolate yourself. So I do that pretty much every morning. If I miss a morning, I don't get maniacal about it. So I'll do it later in the day. But I just make sure. And then after a while, well, you know this, Connie, you're successful. You just start thinking that way.
Right.
You know, and you think, and then you can catch yourself when you're doing something really stupid or negative or you know, off purpose, you catch yourself because
mm-hmm.
your subconscious mind will pick it up right away. And it says, wait a minute now, hold it. So that's what I do. Yeah, you know. It's fun.
Yeah, those are really great ways. And then do you do the vision board thing?
I do not, but my wife does all the time. And I, the storyboard and vision board is a great technique. I'm a visual learner anyway, but I'm just too lazy to do it, frankly. And then I like to change things all the time, so I'm always changing my visualization. You know,
one time
I'm skipping down the path, another time I'm climbing a ladder, and it goes and it drives me nuts sometimes too.
So what do you think is the biggest mistake that people make in trying to, you know, get whatever, whether it's their career going or their life going, or whether a goal is to, you know, to be in a relationship or get a divorce or have more friends? What's the biggest mistake?
I know I'm covering a lot of ground here. It's a self-imposed spear they stab themselves with. And the spear
Spear
that they stab themselves
fear
with.
Fear or spear?
Spear, as in arrow. And,
oh, okay, a spear, okay.
And what that spear is this the limiting beliefs that they think that this is the only way to live a life, or this is the only potential that I have, or this is the only thing that will work, and they're afraid to step out of that and try new things because, one, it's scary, and two, they've had so much conditioning in them about this is the only way to live a life. I talk a lot about religion in the book, but religions do that. I mean, every war we've ever fought is a religious war, frankly, and people are killing themselves in the name of God or whatever God it might be.
Right.
Now, that's a controversial statement to say, but if you really think about it, what bothers me is we've got like 3 billion people on the planet, and who's right? You know, and everybody's fighting to be right, and then which separates people rather than unites them.
I want to go back to this spear. So basically what you're saying, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, is that one of the worst habits that a lot of people tend to have is that they, you know, they're self-sabotaging themselves, but they're literally, you know, hurting themselves with a spear
I'm a visual learner. And I can see that, but you know, it's a self-inflicted wound. Other people aren't doing that too. The other people are providing information, providing points of view, providing, you know, ways to do things and processes and templates and strategies. But you got to look at all that information and look at all those options and say what's the best way to live my life, with good intent to do and be joyful and grateful for the opportunity to do it. And a lot of people just, you know, they just stab themselves all the time. And what happens, because I've seen lots of people set goals, do affirmations, visualize great end results, have powerful emotions, and they still can't reach their goal. And what's really happening there is they're sabotaging themselves with a conditioned belief that is so deep in their psyche they can't recognize it. But, you know, if I go out and I use all these tools and I still can't reach the goal, which seems to be reasonably that I could, and I fall up short, it's just a great clue that you've got a belief in there. You've got a basic assumption about life that is so embedded in your subconscious mind that you have to go back and address that issue before you can move forward. And I'd really suggest people do that. And we don't always know what it is, but I think people really do at some level. And if you're just reading failure after failure after failure with going and trying to do all the right things, I will guarantee you, you've got a hidden belief down there that's just stabbing you every time you step forward. So. Well, doesn't that make sense when you think about it?
Yeah.
I mean, I always had good Fortune 500 jobs with Xerox and Morgan Stanley and Dean Witter and those types of businesses. But I never was a rock star in terms of income. And I always did pretty well, enough to live a really good life. And I was sitting down with a friend of mine over lunch, and he said, "What do you think you're going to make this year, Ole?" And I wrote down a figure on a piece of paper, and he laughed at me. And it just crushed me. And he said, "I'm going to make that the first quarter." And he said, "That's all you're going to make for the whole year?" And he says, "I want to tell you something, Ole." He said, "You're the only one sitting at this table that think that that number you wrote down is a big number." And it was like a huge wake-up call for me. You know, and it's because I grew up saying, you know, learning from my father and mother, I mean, we were just poor, frankly, you know, just poor people. And no money and losing jobs. And my dad used to tell me, you know, money is the root of all evil. You don't get around those rich people, they'll mess with you every time. And I grew up with that attitude. And then I, you know, And so I always kind of did well, and then I would sabotage myself. And then I finally had to go back and look at that belief about prosperity and abundance. And for me, it was deserving it.
So how did you, I mean, our listeners clearly, especially people who are being hard hit in these economic
yeah.
times, you know, can benefit from this. How did you then make that breakthrough?
Well, first of all, I discovered what was sabotaging myself, and it was.
And how did you discover that?
Because I kept affirming, I raised the goal, and I kept affirming I was going to make more money and have more prosperity and abundance in my life, and it wasn't coming. So I knew that somewhere down there, there was a belief system that was just tripping me every time.
Okay.
So I went back and worked on that belief system. I started,
and how did you work on it?
Doing affirmations, visualizations, and emoting. I used to affirm that prosperity and abundance comes to me easily, and I deserve it.
Uh-huh.
I would see my bank account full of money, and when I get my monthly statement, I actually made a mock-up of that monthly statement and put numbers on there.
Uh-huh.
And then that made me feel good, and so I just kept it up until I broke through the barrier.
Uh-huh.
But I had to address that, because otherwise I would have been one of these classic guys that, you know, that
uh-huh.
looked pretty good, but never is really that good.
Wow.
So that's how I did it. And then like making six figures was like, I couldn't believe that anyone could do that. And that was my problem. I believed that I couldn't do it. And then once I changed that belief system and started working on it, I blasted through that number and
mm-hmm.
took off. But
now, how long did it take you to, you know, to break through? Once you made, you know, once you recognized
mm-hmm.
that you had those limiting beliefs, you know, where you were, you know, hitting yourself or you know, striking
yeah.
yourself with a spear, how long did it take you to make that change?
I don't remember if it was 3 months or 3 years or 15 years or 5 days, but I remember.
That's a little bit.
but what I do remember, Connie, is that when I got really attuned to what I thought my purpose in life was and where my passion was, the money came.
Mm.
You know, there's an old saying that if you love what you do, the money will come. And I hated what I did. I was in sales and marketing and on commission with Fortune 500 companies, and I only felt good every once in a while. That's when I made a big deal and got a big check. But I dreaded going to work. I dreaded doing that. I dreaded wearing three-piece suits every day. I dreaded, you know, the sales meetings and the politicking that goes on in big corporations. So once I left that and got attuned to what I was passionate about, because at some level I always wanted to write. And at some level, apparently, I always wanted to speak. And at some level, I always wanted to advise people on a peer level basis. And once I got connected with that, then the floodgates opened. But
well, I think
it opened slowly the first year. It was 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. So for people who are going through financial struggles right now, then what would you recommend to them? What should they do?
Stay away from the negative talk. Stay away from the negative thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from people that are going to drag you down
mm-hmm.
and keep you where you are. And understand that whatever condition you are in right now, it is temporary. And you can get through it. And, you know, stay conscious, be accountable, make life-enhancing choices rather than going on autopilot.
Hmm.
You know, look at role models that are doing well and try to emulate what they do with your own spin on it, because you can't be like anyone else. You can only get close to it. And just know that when you start your day off in a positive, energetic way, that you can make it through it. And you can come out the other end, and you'll come out the other end of this recession pretty well. Now, I know that's hard to believe when you're laid off, got four kids.
Right.
And you've got a subprime mortgage that you can't keep up with. Well,
mm-hmm.
there's also that sense of accountability. You know, why did you buy the subprime mortgage? That's not a useful exercise to go through to blame yourself, but there is a sort of accountability there that you have to own to get yourself through this tough time. Also, surround yourself with people who are successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whether it be a mastermind group or a group of people that you hang out with that are doing well in life and coming through. Every recession we've ever had in the history of our economy, people
mm-hmm.
have made money. You know, there's always someone who's going to make money on the other side or do well or improve their position. And like I said, this might be the time that you want to just change the whole thing, what you're doing. I mean,
change what you're doing.
Well, yeah, it's never too late to go to law school, I think. It's never too late to become a doctor. It's never too late to be an entrepreneur. It's never too late to be an outstanding broadcaster and, you know, blog radio. And I think that this might be a time for people to really assess what they're doing. You know, and they will get through it. No one's going to die or go to jail. You know, during this recession, unless they're crooks.
Mm-hmm.
So you will make it. It's just a temporary situation. That's the mindset you have to take. And you know, I'm starting to see signs of things getting better. Our telephone just stopped ringing about November of last year. You know, and because I didn't have to work too hard for the business I was getting, and then it just started to ring again about 3 weeks ago, and all of a sudden we got about 6 or 7 jobs in the pipeline that just started to come in.
Hmm.
And you know, through our website, which we spent a lot of money on during this recession, you know, we spent, go look at my website, it's really an outstanding website. And so we spent this time building up that website and promoting the book. And then we also bought a new house up in Seattle, you know, so in January. So I'm just saying, hey, we're not going to get slowed down by this thing.
So that's certainly the attitude to have. Wow. So I'm so fortunate to have this radio show. I get to talk to these, you know, just incredibly inspiring guests. It's really exciting to me. So if you were going to advise people one habit that they should break that they have that's really bad, what would you recommend that be?
That they think that what they have is that all that's out there. They think that what they have now is all that there is.
Hmm.
And there's a lot more. I mean, this is a tremendously abundant universe. And you have to find a way to tap into it and be willing. You know, the TV program I love the most is Taboos. You ever watch that program?
No.
National Geographic. Well, they look at other cultures. They look at other belief systems. They look at other things that may be a taboo to one culture, but it's not to the other.
Uh-huh.
And you just find out there's just a lot of ways to do things. I want to do a little disclaimer. I mean, success and wealth and abundance and happiness and relationships and all those things are relative. You know, one person's mountain may be just a small rise in the horizon to another person. And so I'm not saying that, you know, I got all the answers. I mean, there's certainly people that have a lot more abundance in their life and better relationships. Maybe, I don't know. It goes on and on, but it's meaningful to me, and I'm just saying if people will use these tools, no matter where they are, they're gonna do well in life. I stayed at the Grand Hyatt yesterday in Manhattan, and I needed to get a car to come out here to New Jersey because I'm doing a couple workshops for some CEO groups, and I had a wonderful driver, Esposito.
Hmm.
He was from the Dominican Republic. And he lives in the Bronx, he said, in a war zone. But he's driving a town car. He works 12 to 15 hours a day. He lives in an apartment that almost takes all his income, but he's sending his two little kids to private school. And he says, he works 6 days a week, and he's making it. And he was the most positive-thinking guy I've ever been with in my life. I mean, this guy was just, he said he runs into his apartment in the Bronx and locks the door. He says he doesn't look out the window when he hears the gunshots. But he said he's putting his kids in private school and he's sending money home to his mom and dad in the Dominican Republic and, you know, just out there making life happen. And I just thought, this guy should be up in front of the room talking to groups, not me.
Hmm.
So to take him. Yeah, isn't that great? You know, and here we're sweating whether or not we can buy a new car or not. And, you know, he sent his kids to private school driving a hack. You know,
wow, interesting. So do you have any final thoughts?
Oh, just that I really want to thank you for asking me some really good questions. And I think if people do buy this book and find it's interesting to do the exercises. This book was not designed to be a casual read, although the stories are kind of interesting.
They're really wonderful exercises. Again, the book is Aspire, 3 Powerful Strategies for Creating More of What You Want Now.
Also, visit my website, www.influencemany.com, and you'll see lots of information about this book.
And I'm linked to everything from my blog, which is Gab with the Gurus blog.
Right.
So any final, you know, recommendations or words of inspiration for our listeners?
Yeah, just don't settle.
Don't
settle. Just don't settle. I mean, I'm not saying be maniacal about all this stuff, but we are much more than what we think we are, and we're everything that we think we are. And so when things aren't working, change your thought process. and start seeing the beautiful person that you are and all the potential that you have within you, and then it will start to come.
Okay, I want you to repeat that for our listeners. When things aren't working, change your thoughts.
Change your thoughts. It's as simple as that, and it takes a little discipline to do that, you know, because we're habitual in our thinking, you know, and so we got to change our thoughts. And that's it. And that's the start. I mean, that, and then everything goes from there.
Well, I'm sure, you know, you've so inspired listeners, and it was very exciting to have you on the show.
Oh, great.
And I wish you all the best on your book, Aspire. And I don't know if I think I wish Debbie good luck on her book, Women
you
on
did,
Fire.
You did, yeah.
And
Women
it was really
fire.
Cool because I had like one inspirational person after another today. And that's what I like to do with this show. So, Ole, thank you so very, very much for joining us on the show today. Really, really appreciate it.
You were a wonderful interview.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
And I want to invite listeners to, of course, come back next week, this time, Tuesday at 3 p.m. That's when we have a show here. And, of course, you can listen live or later. Next week, as usual, I have a very inspiring, exciting guest. Actually, I always have inspiring guests. And our guest next week is Michael Port, who's going to tell you how to think big. It's very, very interesting. I first learned about Michael Port, well, actually a while back, but then lo and behold, his book was assigned as part of my life coach training. This was an earlier book that he'd written, and he is known within coaching circles and all circles about helping you to get clients. But now he's moved, and he tells you how to think big. That is his next book. He's actually written 4 books on business and marketing. So the one that I was familiar with initially was called Book Yourself Solid. And now his new book has really kind of opens up your eyes to a whole new way of thinking. Thinking big. So join us next week, Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. Again, you can listen to this show anytime. All you need to do is go to www.gabwiththegurus.com, and you can get more information on my blog, which is www.gabwiththegurusblog.com. And if any of you are writers out there, know that I am looking for some blog writers, so feel free to contact me. Again, this is Connie Bennett. This is the Gab with the Gurus radio show, and I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Gab with the Gurus radio show with Connie Bennett. Join us live Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern at gabwiththegurus.com or listen anytime thanks to Blog Talk Radio. Learn more about Connie's book, Sugar Shock, at www.sugarshock.com.